Good morning, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are around the world. And welcome to this Learn Live session. We're going to be talking about champion cloud computing, curricular design, and certification implementation. I'm Lee Stott, my principal cloud advocate at Microsoft, and I'm going to be joined this morning by various guests from around the world. So I've got Dr. Derek Foster, who's an associate professor at the University of Lincoln. Dr. Lauren Magada-Carter, who's the head of data science programs at Pearson College in London, and Mi Ting Tao, who's a manager at Nanyang Polytechnic in Singapore. So today we're going to be talking about various different things to help you get started in building blended learning curriculum with Microsoft Learn and best practices from the ACM around cloud computing development. So I'd like to welcome our first guest speaker, Dr. Derek Foster. So hi, Derek.
Morning, Lee. Thanks for having me on.
Morning. So this is today's agenda. So we're going to be talking about the ACM Cloud Computing Working Group, its aims and outcomes. We're going to be walking through the learning path, which is implementing certification in academic programs. We're then going to be covering some case studies of implementing Microsoft Fundamental Certifications at South Central Institute and a case study around implementing Microsoft role-based certification courses at Nanyang Polytechnic. So Derek, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello everyone. So I'm Dr. Derek Foster and I'm an Associate Professor at the University of Lincoln. So I've got quite a lot of experience around deploying Microsoft certifications in academic programs, and that's what we're going to talk about today.
Thanks, Derek. So one of the first things we're going to start with is the ACM Cloud Computing Working Group's aims and outcomes. So we've been working with the ACM for many years. So could you tell us a bit about, firstly, what is a cloud working group and what does the ACM do with its working groups?
So the ACM working groups are essentially a group of educators and industry experts, usually between 5 and 10 people, who work towards a common goal. So this would be an educational goal. It could be developing curricula, which is what we're going to talk about for this working group. But it could also be about looking at different teaching pedagogy approaches that you could use as part of your teaching practice. So they are very diverse and they are a great way to get your work published quickly and also to work with a great team of experts.
Yeah, and that's really important. So we've been working together since 2018 on a working group focused around cloud computing. So the goal of this working group has really been to establish different frameworks and methodologies of how cloud computing can be implemented within a course curriculum. So Derek, do you want to talk a bit about the different aspects of the working group? You know, we've got various constituents from vendors to college professors to university professors. You know, from your perspective as an academic, what are the key outcomes?
Yeah, so we really started from scratch with this working group. We have a group of educators and industry experts that had the common goal of understanding the needs of industry and the cloud skills that are required out there and how we can upskill and give students the opportunities to learn those skills or those industry transferable skills. So we started off with the first working group back in 2018, and we developed a bunch of knowledge areas and associated learning outcomes to go with them.
And yeah, you know, 2018 was a really interesting year because, you know, that was when Industry 4.0 was just starting to be discussed. And, you know, there was lots of debate about what these new technologies were and how the internet and cloud computing was now becoming fundamental to pretty much every course out there. So we broke it down into a number of different courses from AI, machine learning, cybersecurity, robotics, big data and IoT. And it was really identifying what were the key facets of those courses and what were the key learning objectives and knowledge areas an academic needed to implement within those courses. So when we moved to 2019, Derek, what was the real goal there?
Well, as we'd already developed the knowledge areas and the learning outcomes, we then wanted to move and understand how we can actually disseminate that out there. We wanted to create a community around that so that educators could contribute towards that community. For example, if they'd created a cloud course using the outcomes from the working group, the knowledge areas and the learning outcomes, then we wanted them to publish those courses so that other educators could actually pick up that work. And we also looked at the types of job roles that were out there in the industry and how you can actually design your courses that directly support specific job areas in cloud. And that could be AI, for example, or it could be data science, or it could be general cloud computing.
Yeah, and again, you know, one of the key areas here was to actually look at the job boards and job listings to see what skill sets and requirements the industry was looking for to then best advise, you know, what sort of roles or what sort of course boundaries should we be creating for those future skills and opportunities so we could align the mapping of those. Then in 2020, we went on to really look at the knowledge areas and learn objectives. So Derek, from an educator's perspective, could you tell us a little bit more about knowledge areas and learn objectives and why they're so important?
Yeah, so we did this back in the first working group, but this was really a regroup because cloud moves so quickly, it evolves fast, and the services that you use this year are very likely to change or evolve into something different the following year. So there's maintenance associated with this. So we went back again and looked for the knowledge areas and learning outcomes and updated them. And we also had a focus on looking at those knowledge areas and LOs again, specifically looking at how can we align those LOs with vendor certification. So if you've got a course, for example, and cloud networks, for example, then you might be wanting to look at how you can implement vendor certification inside your academic course. So we looked at the challenges that are faced with that, and we thrashed out a framework and how you can actually do that from the program level outcomes down to the course level outcomes, and then finally mapping that over to the vendor certification outcomes.
Yeah, and you know, vendor certification and blended learning is a huge opportunity. So this really brought us on to 2021, so our last paper that we're just literally finishing. So could you tell us a bit more about what that, you know, what we've been working on during that paper?
So this paper is really about bringing everything together that we've done over the last three working groups. So we're really looking at how we can disseminate further, and really all about best practices, bringing all those knowledge areas together, the curriculum design, the vendor certification, the learning repository, the community, the job roles. It's about how do we package all of that up and disseminate it. And that's something that we're hoping to do today by talking about the learning path, which we're going to talk about next.
Excellent. So, you know, we've just done a quick poll with the audience and 100% of the people who are watching today are educators. So I think they're all in the right place to learn more around this. And as Derek said, you know, we've been spending the last few months working both within the ACM working group and also with Microsoft Learn. So Microsoft Learn is a completely free resource where you can take those primers, hands-on labs to actually blend into your curriculum. And what we wanted to do was share with you today a new learning path, which is walking through the implementations of certification and academic programs. And Derek and myself have been working on this with our colleagues in Microsoft and within academia to really build a learning pathway that allows you as educators to have that principal understanding of how to blend certification into your courses. Now, if you're interested, you can actually walk along with us and look at the modules as we go through them. And they're available at aka.ms/academic-program-cert-01. So that takes you to the actual learn pathway. So Derek, in terms of the key goals of what we wanted to do from this learning pathway, can you tell us a little bit more around the rationale?
Yeah, so really, as I mentioned previously, we wanted to build on the outcomes of the ACM working group, and we wanted to sort of disseminate and press together as much of this information as possible so that an educator could take this learning path and understand what they have to do in order to implement those certifications inside their academic programs. So we're going to talk about this at a high level, as Lee said. We're going to walk through each of the modules inside the learning path, and we're going to discuss the headline outcomes of each one of them that an educator would gain.
Excellent. And again, as any Microsoft Learn module, this has a set of Microsoft learning objectives. And again, you know, the key things that we want to do is understand the benefits of implementing certification degree programs, choose the level of certification that is suitable for your course and program needs. So Microsoft starts from fundamentals all the way through to advanced. Identify the industry requirements for implementing certification. So again, you know, do you have a course that fits with a specific role or technology type? Describe the processes involved in creating a new program. So, you know, what do you need to do from an academic perspective? What proposal documents do you need? what best practice is available out there. Then we'll choose the most serviceable learning outcomes for your course or program. So again, that whole mapping of outcomes and pathways. We'll map certification outcomes to academic learning outcomes, and then understand how to launch your new course and program with certification. So again, you know, this is going to be a busy session. We're going to cover quite a bit of topics. Again, you can follow along with the Microsoft Learn module, and there's videos in there as well to get you accompanied to what the needs are. In terms of prerequisites, there is no prerequisites to any of this. You just need to be familiar with higher education. Ideally have some experience of teaching and have an idea of creating courses, and also the ability to create and manage learning resources for course development. So again, if you're an educator, there is nothing additional to any of this. So we're going to start with module one, which is defining academic and industry requirements for implementing certification in degree programs. So this is really around how to develop a degree program and the tasks that are involved and the diverse range of stakeholders who are also involved. Again, you can follow along with this. It's aka.ms/academic-program-cert-02. So the way we've built Microsoft Learn modules is that we've built a set of learn objectives and knowledge areas, exactly as you would do for a course, and a number of units. So first of all, Derek, can you just walk us through the units that are in this module?
Sure, thanks, Lee. So this module is the first module of the learning path, and it's really all about setting the scene, understanding the type of program or cloud program that you want to develop, and understanding the academic requirements as well as the industry requirements. So we're going to walk through, we'll introduce the module. We do have several case studies that Laura and Mia are going to present after we go through the learning path. But the learning path itself has a case study built into it to help contextualize each one of the modules. And then we're going to describe the role of certification in academic degree programs. So why are you doing this? What is the rationale? What have your students got to gain from this? And what do the educators gain from it too? And then we're going to look at describing those industry requirements. So again, that's really looking at industry transferable skills. And then you have to start thinking about the initial program proposal document. So that's the very first piece of official documentation that you will create for your new program. And then the module will look at a knowledge check. There'll be several questions that you can go through. There's only one right answer for those. And then there'll be a summary at the end of the module.
And again, we have live moderators on this call. So if you're interested in asking questions, head over to Microsoft Learn TV, which is at Microsoft Learn. Again, we have Salman and Jonathan who are moderating the chat channel. And again, please ask us questions and we'll receive questions as speakers to be able to ask throughout this session. So this is where we now start to define certification processes. So the first thing that we want to look at is how to define the actual program curriculums. So we start off with a pilot stage. So we look at how we can actually start to offer the courses either as a standalone or extracurricular. We'll then look at the intermediate stage, which is course certificate alignments and the outcomes of an existing course, and then the advanced stage, which is actually integrating the course directly with your academic program. So Derek, can you just share a bit more details around how this process works from an academic perspective?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for that quick recovery. So there's a document that you can also use that's part of the Learning Download Centre, and that's also called the Course Implementation Guide. So Lee's already mentioned that there's several approaches that you can use, and we're going to discuss these as we move through this part of the talk. So you've got the early stage where you can actually run it as a standalone course, and then you can actually align it with other academic courses, and then at the advanced stage you can integrate it inside. And then the diagrams on the right hand side there, you can see several examples of that. You've got a course being delivered in between semesters, which is standalone. You've got a course being delivered alongside a similar academic course, which is alongside. And then you've got the integrate inside a course. But we recommend that you start from the top level, start from a standalone extracurricular viewpoint, and then work your way through to get that experience using the course materials from Microsoft Learn for each one of those courses. And then finally, hopefully you'll be able to move through and eventually potentially offer academic credit for those certifications inside your academic courses.
Thanks, Derek. And again, you know, in terms of, you know, the actual role of the program, this is now really important. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you would describe the academic and industry requirements for creating a degree programme?
Yeah, so normally when you're creating any sort of a new academic programme, you're going to have to present a rationale to your senior management at your institution around what are the graduate outcomes, you know, and this is mainly focused on things like employability metrics, what are the types of job roles graduates are moving into, and the types of salaries that those graduates are actually going to gain if they graduate from your programme. So the role of the industry experts at this stage will be to feed in the types of skills that industry are needing now, but also in the future. You can't just design a programme for the skills it's needed right now for the next 12 months. You really have to be thinking about 1, 2, 3, 4, or even 5 years ahead to try and capture that.
And again, this is where the roles of things like industrial advisory boards, guest lectures, engagement with both, you know, national industry and local industry really help the course, because again, you get that feedback either on a daily basis or on a regular basis in terms of the types of technologies and services those actual parties are utilizing. So again, it's really great to have that insight from industry. So the next step is really describe the industry requirements for creating a course. So Derek, could you tell us a little bit more around this stage?
Yeah, so as I mentioned previously there, the industry panel members that you'll have at stage one, but also at the later stage, which we'll cover shortly, of the approval event for your programme, there really will be a discussion that focuses on those industry transferable skills. So essentially, each one of your courses inside your proposed programme will be scrutinised. The learning outcomes will be looked at. The syllabus will be looked at. What are the topics that you're going to cover? And what are the technologies that you'll have to utilise to facilitate those topics? So there's quite a detailed conversation and discussion that will go around there. And it can develop into quite a heated debate about which technology might be better than another. So you have to go in there prepared and prepare your academic team around that as well.
And again, during this stage, is it like things like considering what facilities or software licenses or lab resources? And again, with COVID, you know, how do you provide this technology to students who may be remote for the next academic year? Is that the sort of level when you have that consideration?
Yeah, so you must have a good understanding of the resources that you're going to need to deliver the programme. So remember, you're still at the proposal stage, but you still have to supply these details. You know, do you have the expertise within your academic team? And as you mentioned, Lee, do you have the hardware? And in the case of cloud programmes, do you have access to a vendor platform where you can actually deliver the learning materials that your students will need? So it's very important to get that early.
Excellent. So again, you know, this really goes into describing the following aspects and then developing a set of documentation and resources to, number one, create that stakeholder group internally within the academic teams. Again, create that stakeholder group with your external partners and advisors to say, you know, these are the things that we want to introduce. So the key things that are in that document are the project description or the program description. So what do you want to actually have as that new program? Is it going to be a new undergraduate course? Is it a new master's course? Is it a rewrite of an existing course? You then have the planning. So, you know, how are you going to implement this? So do you need additional teaching resources? Do you need additional costs, additional licenses? Will this actually draw in more students? Will it be students who are full-time, part-time, CPD? What's the revenue projections? Again, how are you going to market this course? So, you know, are you going to engage with education bodies, or is it going to be a CPD course that you target at local industry? Again, you know, you look at the physical resources and the digital resources. So we talk about lab space, physical access, licensing, etc. And then finally, it's really around that employability. So what comes back to the NSAT of students, and a key KPI for universities is having those students in employment in a degree course that is associated to the actual degree or program that they are studying. So again, once you have this all built, you can then go forward and present that and go for approval. So what we're going to do now is have a quick knowledge check. So we're going to open this up to the audience. So everyone who is watching this on Learn TV, there will be a voting button that will appear in a second. And what we would like to ask you is, what is the main purpose of having an ex having an external for students, what are the key benefits of taking certification? So for a student, what are the key benefits of taking certification? Number one, they get better grades in their coursework. Number two, their employability improves. A, they'll get better grades in their coursework. B, employability improves. And C, they can train other students in their area of certification. So Derek, which one do you think is correct?
Well, first of all, let's go through the incorrect answers first. So answer A, they'll get better grades in their coursework. Well, we would love that to happen, but there isn't any evidence to correlate that suggests that is the case. So that is incorrect. And then answer C, they can train other students in the area of their certification. So that would be great to happen, but that's not going to happen in an educator space. That could potentially happen when the student graduates and moves into employment, where they may train their colleagues, but inside an educational environment, that's not going to be happening. So that only leaves B. So yes, their employability improves. And there's lots of white papers out there that will back that up through research that says, yeah, students who have X certifications and Y contribute more to the business.
Excellent. So well, I'd be really interested to understand, you know, as an audience, what sort of things did you, you know, what which area did you think was correct? So hopefully you've all said that B is correct, that their employability improves. That's the most important thing, is that, you know, we're building these degree programs so that employability of students improves. So now we're going to move on to module two. So module two is designing degree program curricula that implements certification. So the whole goal here is about creating opportunities for students to achieve Microsoft certification benefits and both achieve their degree or award body institutions. So what we want the student to end up with is both an academic qualification or certification and a professional certification. Again, that creates a differentiator in the market because the student has their degree or their college program plus a professional certification. So again, you can follow along with us at http://academicprogrammscert03. So Derek, what are the key units that we're going to cover in this module?
So in this module, there's a large focus on the development of curricula. So let's walk through these. So first of all, you have to understand your program design. So at this point, or back in stage one, you very likely created what I would call a top level overview of your program, where you've got a structure where each one of your courses are named and you've got them in semester A, for example, on semester B, and you can follow that linear progression that a student would very easily through that diagram. So you must understand your program design at this stage. Then you're going to explore the certification types. So as Lee mentioned earlier, you've got the beginners or fundamentals, then you've got the role-based or associate level, and then you have expert. So you have to make decisions around which type of certification that you're going to embed in your curricula. And then you have to choose your certification approaches. As we mentioned earlier, there's three different approaches or three main approaches, and these are going to be standalone, alongside, or integrate inside. And then finally, when you have all of that mapped out the way you want it to be, then you're actually going to design your program curricula and map the learning outcomes to the certification. So remember, you've got your program level outcomes derived from the knowledge areas of the ACM working group. Then you have your course level learning outcomes that map back to those program level outcomes. And then you have your certification outcomes, which are mapped at the course level. But essentially, you've got that hierarchy there where you've got program level, course level, and certification level, and they are all related and linked back through. And as with all the modules, you have a knowledge check and a summary.
Excellent. So again, you know, what we're trying to do here is really define how to blend that curriculum approach. So Derek, in terms of, you know, bridging this skill gap with industry, Microsoft has the following fundamental pathways. So we have Azure Fundamentals, which is AZ900. We have AI Fundamentals, which is AI900. We have Data Fundamentals, DP900, and Power Platform, which is PL900. So they're like our fundamental exams, which then allow a student or learner to go on to become that expert level. And again, what we try and guide users with from a Microsoft Learn perspective is roles. You know, so you might be a computer science student who is an aspiring data scientist. So we try and map roles and pathways to what the student expects to have as an outcome of a role. And again, you know, roles are changing consistently. You know, there's roles that have been created today that didn't exist in the past. So how would you know, how do we actually start to define those pathways and routes for students?
So again, that comes back to the design of your curricula. So you're thinking about the topics that you want to deliver. So you mentioned things like data there, and you had AI. So you will very likely have academic courses as part of your a computer science program that has an AI course or that has a database or data storage course. So that those are the courses that you'll be targeting for your certification. So as you alluded to, the best place to start is the fundamentals. So you can use the Microsoft Fundamentals learning materials inside those courses, which I believe are suitable for undergraduate level. And then if the student wants to take that further, for example, you could have a master's program with more advanced academic courses inside that. And you can then look at the role-based certifications that relate back to that. So as an example, you could have DP900 in a data course for an undergraduate program. And then students can actually move on from that, take a master's program and take the role-based DA100, which is data analytics, which could be part of an advanced cloud data course. So there is a clear pathway there that you can map out inside your programs.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's what exactly one of the case that is within the Learn module of something that you've done at the University of Lincoln around the development of the new master's course. And you've built that pathway where a student can have these technology and certifications aligned with specific modules. So it's really key that you understand your program design as an academic. And on the slide that you can see on the screen at the moment, we have an example here of a year one study with two semesters. In each semester, there's four units or modules, depending whereabouts you are from around the world. And they're specific courses of subject which the students will study. So you have things like programming fundamentals, problem solving, web technologies, and computer architecture in semester one, which is semester A. And then in the second semester, you actually start to get that hands-on because these are first-year students in OO programming, algorithms and complexity, cloud computing, and operating systems. And what you can see from this diagram is we've blended into that curriculum for cloud computing, so into the module for cloud computing, the AZ900 curriculum. So again, that gives students cloud computing plus Azure fundamentals in cloud computing, which provides that real expertise or knowledge in a specific cloud platform. So when we talk about exploring different certification types, we have a great resource at aka.ms/train-cert-posters, which is this whole pathway approach. And again, you know, Derek, from your experience, how do you see, you know, like a year one student to a year three student, and where should they be sitting in pathways? Or is it, what's your sort of best practice recommendations for that?
Yeah, so at Lincoln, we really look at cloud as being the three pillars of cloud. So we look at compute, we look at data, and we look at networking. So we'll look at whereabouts in the program we'll have those academic courses, and then we'll pinpoint those courses, and then we'll look at the certification components that we can actually add to them. So as I said previously, if we have an academic data course at undergraduate level, databases, then we could actually use DP900 materials inside that. And then moving on to the role-based, we can start looking at the SQL administrator, for example, or the DA100 data analytics. So these types of diagrams that you're showing here, Lee, in the slide are really, really useful for academics to sort of overlay on top of their own academic blueprint. So in previous slides, you've seen these level one, for example, computing course, the types of courses, and then you can use Microsoft's certification learn pathways and look at your own academic program and look at the pathways that you've already got in terms of your academic courses and the role that the Microsoft certifications can play in the different types that you can actually use for your academic program.
And again, this feeds back to the whole ACM papers and publications around learn objectives, knowledge areas, and being able to blend that learning together. So when we talk about blending, there's really four different, three different key styles of blending certification into existing academic curriculum. So Derek, can you give us your experiences on these three different models?
Yeah, so we touched on these briefly earlier, but the lowest barrier approach is the first one. So that standalone course, which is an extracurricular course. So I recommend this for educators that are new to Microsoft Learn and Microsoft certifications in general. And these will give you a good experience around what you expect from the learning materials, the slide decks, the course data sheets, the certification materials themselves, and crucially, that student feedback from running that course as a pilot. So when you're armed with that sort of a knowledge, I would then recommend you move on to either the second or third approaches, depending on how experienced you may feel at that point. So you can the next one is Align. So you can use AZ900, AI900, any of the fundamentals courses, but I'll pick the AI900 in this example. So as I said previously, it's very likely you'll have an AI academic course potentially in your second year of an undergraduate program. So you could align the AI900 certification and run it alongside at the same time as your academic course. And that means students get the benefit of the academic course and also the benefit of the AI900 course, especially the labs that they can use as part of that. And crucially, you still don't have to make any modifications to your academic course because you're running it alongside. You don't have to edit your learning outcomes or anything like that, which can actually take quite a long time to do in an education environment. So you're really getting the best of both worlds. A little bit more workload, but it works well. And after that, the approach is to integrate inside. So really the goal for integrating inside is for students to achieve academic credit for the certification piece. So you really integrate your academic learning outcomes and with the certification outcomes, as we discussed earlier, as part of that mapping exercise. And if you choose to do so, you could offer your students academic credit for taking that certification exam.
So really, you know, there's a three models. So it's a standalone course, which is like, you know, just a course that students can attend, and it could be extra vocational, or it could be, you know, this is an opportunity for you to gain professional certifications, attend a Wednesday afternoon class. You've got the integrate alongside a course. So this is a separate course integrated alongside. So there is some dependencies. So you might be doing teaching of curriculum and then formalized primers and labs in the integrated course. So the alongside course, sorry. And then it's really, you know, there's no real dependencies. If someone fails the integrated, they're not necessarily going to fail their academic program. And then you have the completely integrated course, which is a dependency on the certification pathway. So both on the academic certification, so your degree program, and the professional certification. So they're three solid models. Again, they can be aligned in various different ways. And again, you know, you can experiment with one for, you know, one semester, see how successful it is, or see what the interest is, to then move into that fully integrated development cycle. So when we look at like the whole focus of developing a program curriculum and mapping learning outcomes certifications, you know, we should have really key guidelines. So we should have that program design and structure that we talked about in module one. We should have the program learning outcomes. So what will a student and the educator get from implementing that program? We'll have the program course and learning outcomes. So in terms of learning objectives, what does a student achieve? And then we'll have the curriculum mapping and certification outcomes to then say, you know, what is the alignment? How many primers, how many labs, how many resources, etc., do we need to go into? So when we actually do the program design and structure, what are some of the key aspects that we need to think about?
So going back to the program proposal, you're already thinking about that requirement that you've got in your own institution. So you may have educators who are experts in AI, you may have educators who are expert in data science. So you really first and foremost have to look at your academic expertise within your school. And then you talk to your industry experts that you'll have that industry liaison relationship with for your regular meetings, and you can get to understand, you know, what our industry looking for in the near term as well as a longer term. And you'll actually design your program around that. And it's really useful to have this top level diagram. So in this example, you've got a master's in cloud computing, and then you have what I would call the dark blue boxes, which are the core computer science courses. And then you have the light blue boxes, which highlight these are the cloud components. These are essentially the flavors that are going to be infused inside this program to make it distinct from another master's in computer science, for example. So this is a really useful way to communicate back to all the stakeholders. This is the structure of the program. These are the types of cloud courses that are inside it. And then you can talk about the job roles that actually fall out of those specific cloud courses. And you can also hang off your certification here. So there are two light blue boxes here that have Microsoft certification. And we have the cloud computing and administration course, which has AZ-104 implemented. And we have the cloud data platforms and tools academic course, which has DA-100 data analytics implemented in that. So from this diagram, you can communicate a wealth of information back to your stakeholders on the program design.
Yeah, so we've got a great question from the audience saying they're having similar discussions in their programs right now about what the right approach is. They currently work with apprentices, so they're saying that students are more likely to already have certifications. And, you know, or is the option that they don't really need certifications for particular jobs? So, you know, I know that you've done lots of work around apprentice and you've got lots of student feedback. So it'd be great to hear your thoughts, Derek, on that question. And I go, Laura and Meetang will also probably follow up on that as well.
Yeah, so off the top of my head, we work with closely with local and national businesses around students who have cloud skills. So the students with cloud skills are massively in demand. But one of the common pieces that businesses come back and tell me is that they have to put most of their new start graduates through certification in the first 12 months, for example, of actually being employed. So that takes a lot of time and effort, and it could take, for example, 6 months to put a new start through AZ-900, followed through by AZ-104, and then all of their inductions. So really, with us giving students the opportunity to get those certifications whilst at university on the programme, it's saving that business lots of time and money. And at the same time, it's also making that student far more employable, because that business is more likely to choose a candidate that has certification over a candidate that doesn't.
Definitely. So I think it comes back to that employability piece and also like that readiness for work. You know, if a student comes out with this level of certification already, number one, it saves that partner or vendor from actually, you know, training the student. They can hit the ground running. And also, you know, the student can have that on their CV. So again, you know, employability aspects improve. So, you know, the really interesting aspect is about curriculum mapping for certification outcomes. So this is really looking at the learning objectives of the course, the learning objectives of the actual certification pathways, and how they map together from that curricular design. So Derek, can you give us a bit of idea around how you would go around creating these core and data concepts and how you think about bringing technologies into those curriculums?
Yeah, so first and foremost, it's really important to have coverage in your program. So what you say you want to give to the students, it must be mapped and it must be present inside that program level and course level outcomes. So in terms of ensuring that you do that, when you go through the program proposal and when you go through the program approval event, this will be scrutinized. So the approval panel will have access to all your program outcomes and your course outcomes, and they'll be looking for clear mapping. So as I discussed earlier, you start with your program level outcomes. So you have to ensure that some of those program level outcomes do echo components of your certification. So if you're going to do DA-100 for a cloud data certification inside one of your academic courses, then there must be some program level learning outcomes that actually echo the requirements of that certification outcome. And then you feed that back down to your course level learning objectives. So actually, what are the students going to learn inside that academic course? And then you'll have a mapping table that actually maps over the DA 100 study areas, for example, or the learning objectives, so that they're all present. So what that essentially means is there's clear mapping all the way up from the certification that you want to do to the course outcomes and then up to the programme level outcomes. And the programme approval panel that you'll go through that will take several hours will look very closely at that. So if you've got certification embedded in an academic course and you don't have any clear programme level outcomes that state that that's what they should be doing or that's what they're going to learn, then you're very likely going to be tasked with having to change that to make sure it's there. So the academic integrity of these courses that integrate certification must be really, really robust.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you know, if it's not robust, it's not going to pass certification or validation. And, you know, you will have discrepancies or queries that will mean you'll have to recertify or validate again. So it's time for another knowledge check. So if you want to head over to LearnTV and the poll will be answered there. And the question is, a university is planning to run Microsoft certification courses for the first time. Students who are just about to begin in their degree program, which of the following certification types would be most suitable for these types of learners? So these are first year students who are just starting their degree program. So is it A, associate certification, B, expert certification, or C, fundamental certification? So if you'd like to answer the poll, Derek, which ones do you think are the wrong ones?
Well, first of all, wouldn't it be great to be a first year student again?
It would, yes, definitely.
So if you think about this carefully, you know, if a first year student is just starting the new academic degree programme, if they come across expert level certification, for example, it's really going to be written all over it that, yeah, you need several years of experience to actually undertake this type of certification. You're going to probably have been employed in a specific job role that covers that type of certification. So it's unlikely that that's going to be a good fit. And then you step down to associate role-based. So again, it's possible that this may only be suitable for students that have either a good academic grounding already in that area or somebody who's perhaps just graduated and been working in the industry for, say, 12 months. So it could be suitable, but only likely for a student who has some experience or grounding in that area already, either academic or an industry. So that leaves us with fundamental certification, which of course is a great fit. It has the basic foundational concepts for the course that you're doing, and it's a very good fit for your first year students. So that is the correct answer, answer C.
Exactly. So the answer is C. So as Derek said, we start off with fundamentals, we then move to associate, and then we move to expert level. So typically we'd be thinking of fundamental and associate level certification alignment within degree programs. So once we've done this process, we now move on to how to prepare the program for an approval event. So this module broadly explores the program approval process for a new degree program that implements Microsoft certification. So again, you can follow along at aka.ms/academic-program-cert-4. In this module, we'll be covering an introduction, identify the actual program approval stakeholders, about the program approval process, we'll then do a knowledge check and then a summary. So if we talk about the actual program approval stakeholders, Derek, can you talk us through who these key four stakeholders are?
Yeah, so I think it's good to start off with that generally these stakeholders could be generalised, not just in the UK context of higher education or further education, but also in a global context. The programme approval process is very similar in any institution across the world. So really, you're going to have your teaching team. So these are your co-pilots. They are part of the delivery of your new academic programme, and they contain all of the expertise, as well as you, that are capable of delivering that programme. So your academic team are going to be those stakeholders that field questions during the programme approval process. The industry and academic panel members will ask a barrage of questions around, for example, the academic integrity of the mapping of certification to the programme outcomes, and also questions on things like employability and transferable skills. So you have to make sure that your academic team are prepared. Then you have students. So in some institutions, there's normally a student stakeholder on the panel, and they're going to ask you questions such as, how many exams do you have? What is the assessment strategy? What extracurricular activities? So all of the student-facing type experiences are the type of questions that the student's going to ask. Then you have your faculty administrators, and generally these are people who are experts on policy. So if you wanted to implement certification, for example, inside one of your modules, your programme, then they'll have information around any constraints, such as the number of credits that you're allowed to allocate to a certification piece. So those people are very, very important, and they've got lots of useful information they can impart. So it's useful to talk to these stakeholders before the programme approval event to ensure that you're already adhering to any of those constraints.
Excellent. And again, the programme approval event is typically like a panel board meeting. It's, you know, it's typically done face-to-face where the academics present on their new course proposal, and there is that level of discussion and debate that happens around the table. So usually it's a formal meeting where you identify and discuss. The academic introduces the context of the actual programme, setting the context of the programme team, what the programme involves. There's general discussion between the different stakeholders. The academic is then usually asked to leave that panel process while the stakeholders have an internal discussion around feedback. And then at that point, the actual feedback is generally presented in email communications up to 2 days later of, has the program been approved? Has the program been approved but with minor changes? Has the program been rejected? And again, that is a formal academic process. So again, Derek, you've been through this a number of times. So, you know, what are the key things that you think, you know, as an academic, you should have prepared and ready for that program approval event?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Natalie, isn't it? And there's a lot to bring together. We've already discussed various parts of that up to this point, but really preparation is key. I can't understate that enough. You must ensure that your stakeholders or your academic team are fully aware of the programme, its structure, the learning outcomes, and crucially what the graduate outcomes are. So at that approval meeting, you're going to have to present the rationale on why you developed the programme, identify the needs for it, identify the industry needs, and identify those key student and graduate outcomes, particularly around employability. So if you prepare that well, you've got a much greater chance of success. And of course, your mapping exercises, there's a lot of scrutiny given to them because the academic integrity of the programme is very important. So you have to ensure that you've got complete coverage of all of your programme level outcomes inside all of your courses. And if you don't, then it's very likely you're going to have to go back and change that. But that's not very common, but it's all about preparation and making sure that you cover all of that. And as I mentioned earlier too, understanding any constraints, how many credits might you actually be allowed to allocate to certification, for example, or any other types of extracurricular activities that you will award credit for.
Yeah, excellent. So yeah, preparation is key. So let's move on to another knowledge check. So that's the end of that module. So the question is, what is the main purpose of having an external industrial advisor on the programme approval panel? Is it A, to discuss graduate salaries across the computing sector? Is it B, to identify and give feedback on industry transferable skills and opportunities? Is it C, to set up a graduate scheme that aligns with their programme? Or is it to help with the creating of learning outcomes? So which answer do you think is correct? Or which ones do you think are incorrect, Derek?
So let's walk through this. Okay, so you've got an external advisor on the panel for your programme approval, and you've got several academics on that team as well who are thinking about, yeah, we designed a programme to do X, Y, and Z. So the role of the industry advisor on the programme, it's not about discussing salaries. Those are dictated by market forces, and it wouldn't be appropriate really to design a programme based upon salaries. And then it's not about the learning outcomes or the academic learning outcomes, because that's the remit of the academic. So that's where their experience lies. They've got the expertise in designing the program and ensuring that the learning outcomes are actually met and covered throughout the program. And then it may seem like a great idea to start talking about graduate schemes and everything else, and in assuring that your program is aligned with those graduate schemes. But graduate schemes can come and go, but your program is actually going to be running for several years, and you can't have any dependencies between a graduate scheme and your learning outcomes and your own program, because that might not last and you might have to go back and change your program again. So that basically leaves us with identifying GIF feedback on industry transferable skills opportunities. Which is the right answer? The role of your industry advisor is to advise on the types of skills that students should have when they graduate from your program.
Exactly. So B is the correct answer. So as an industry expert, you're there to represent the industry, what the skills and requirements are, not just today, but for the coming time. So the key thing there is really around how, as an industry person, do you align, you know, what is your vision of implementation? And then from an educator's perspective, this program has to last for 3 years typically. So what are the key alignment pieces of that technology that will be lasting for 3 years? So it's looking at the fundamentals, the processes, the implementation, and then how does that actually relate back to the course? So that really ends the sessions for module two. What we'd like to do now is actually introduce Dr. Laura Carter to the actual session, and she's going to now start to cover case studies. So thank you, Derek, and we'll be back with you just shortly. So if we look at the next section, so it's case studies, implementing Microsoft Fundamental Certifications courses at South Central Institute of Technology. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Laura Began Carter. Hi, Laura.
Hey Lee, thank you very much, and thank you Derek. So as Lee mentioned, today I'm going to be talking about how you can align your Microsoft Fundamental Certification, combine that with your qualification specifications to achieve a single assessment. So the work I'm going to be discussing today is based on that at the South Central Institute of Technology, but it is as transferable to you listening in your own organisations, and what I plan to take forward in my new role at Pearson College London. So to set some context, South Central's an employer-led provider that focuses on higher technical qualifications, particularly those in digital technologies, including higher national certificates, diplomas, and apprenticeships. It inherently shares the belief that this is a competitive climate and students must be equipped with the industry skills to be the next digital visionaries. Over the last year, I've been on quite a journey exploring how we can better align our module specifications to those in the Microsoft Fundamental Suite. I'll be exploring this and also how it can be framed under a single assessment strategy, the benefits of vocational scenarios in bringing together formative and summative assessments, and then finally, how the work we've been doing has impacted on the student experience.
Thanks, Laura. So, you know, I think you've touched on some really interesting points there. So that question of vocational scenarios, which one of the members of the audience asked us about earlier, and also that student experience, you know, so how important to an academic institution is the student experience?
Absolutely. And in my role, it's really important that the work that we were doing with students as part of their teaching, the learning, the assessment was directly aligned to the end goal of preparing them for industry. So this was no longer just enrichment for us. We wanted to make sure it was fundamentally integrated inside the course and core to that student experience. Of course, on the surface, there are always challenges as to how we could achieve this kind of alignment. So like many of you that could be watching today, asking yourself, is this even possible? We absolutely can relate to those feelings of apprehension. You may be sat there thinking, I've got no time to be able to do my entire module and the certification. You may be thinking to yourself that the content of what you currently deliver maybe doesn't seemingly always align. And many of you may work for a college or university that has established methods of assessment. So you might feel you can never really change it. I can absolutely assure you that from experience, none of these are barriers. And if anything, they've actually become opportunities when we consider a single assessment strategy.
So in terms of that, you know, the barriers that you see, so what, you know, what sort of advice would you give to an educator around how to implement this?
Absolutely. So it's really all around that single assessment strategy. So what do I actually mean when I say single assessment? Well, it's the purposeful coordinated assessment strategy that achieves learning outcomes for both the course and module specifications that many of us as education practitioners design and already deliver, and industry supported certifications such as those offered in Microsoft's Fundamentals. The real value in this approach is how we bring the two together to give fluidity between what our students learn and what they put in practice when they are in work. This approach gives students a direct line of sight that they can both relate to and have experience of that never again will lead to feedback that many students can sometimes leave college or university and say that it's not relevant or out of date by the time that they are done. So what's really key for us here is that we avoid that.
Yeah, and again, you know, that goes back to the discussions we had with Derek around, you know, building a programme that number one is fit for purpose, number two that will last for that 3 years of an academic duration, so does it teach the fundamentals, the processes and the practices, and then really, you know, how do we build in those primers and scenarios that allow students to be ready for that assessment piece. So could you share with us some details about, you know, those vocational scenarios and how you're building assessments?
Absolutely. So I think this really comes down to the crux of the how. So the source of this stems from vocational scenarios that can be directly applied to capture both. It really is that simple. The key to the best assessment design and creation are excellent vocational scenarios where learners can demonstrate their knowledge and their skills. The Microsoft Fundamentals curriculum have them in their materials. So for any of you that are already familiar with AZ900, then you'll know it's Tailwind Traders. For those of you that don't, it's a fictitious retail company, but it has been built into examples across Microsoft Learn content, training materials and labs for students and staff, and it provides a setting for cloud tools to be extended further. We use this as part of our vocational scenario for our own students' assessment, and its series of extended tasks and activities were then built in to ensure that they met any and all of the learning outcomes and assessment criteria from the relevant module spec. In doing so, we were able to check for learning, apply knowledge to assess skills, and because we do like to have our cake and eat it, at the same time prepared students for their AZ900 exam, which they completed at the end. Instead of reinventing the wheel, we were able to reutilise existing shared resources to bring qualifications and industry certifications together much more smoothly and to ensure a shared vision for a single assessment.
Excellent. So you picked up on some really great points there. So number one, if you join the Microsoft Learn Educator Ambassador Programme as an educator, you are given access to that teaching resources material, best practice such as what we're talking about here, access to Microsoft Learn so you can actually implement those implementations. And again, you covered Tailwind Traders. So anybody who's been around the Microsoft ecosystem for a while, you'll remember AdventureWorks. Microsoft always builds these fictitious companies for our demos and services, and we try and align those, and it's really down to scenario-based learning. We provide that as a scenario for you as an educator to build off your curriculum. So again, it's that high-level 10,000 view of an organization, and then you can deep dive into the specifics of the technologies. So, you know, we built our course, we've got this great vocational learning, Laura. How do we actually do the alignment of that to the learning outcomes?
Absolutely. So the work that I know Lee and Derek have really invested in on the learning path gives that clear direction and advice on how to map the learning outcomes to the certification. So a more recent example that I've been using as part of an alignment for DP900 and some specification content with a focus on big data and visualization, you can see on the screen. So whilst it's brief, what we can see here is that each of the mapping lines can result in slightly different outcomes. So when you're doing this yourself or you're advising somebody to do this in practice, you are always hoping for the same context and learning outcome. So that means the Microsoft curriculum and the assessment criteria in front of you are both shared. In some instances, though, there is a difference in context. However, the same outcome can still be achieved. In the example for Module 3 here, students are expected to do this. Whilst the context is not necessarily directly aligned, the Microsoft Learn materials expect students to explore pros and cons, and therefore an assessment-related question or activity could be developed in the scenario to give students an opportunity to achieve both as part of an extended discussion. Finally, though, it may be during the mapping process that you find different context and different outcomes. It is here that we can consider these as scaffolding steps in the student's learning that prepare them to apply their skills later. Therefore, activities can be added to extend beyond the materials, which becomes simpler with a pre-existing vocational scenario for students to build on in their assessment evidence. Ultimately, the mapping process can be aimed for that single assessment. It gives us as education practitioners an opportunity to minimise all waste when it comes to delivery and preparation of resources, and it adds more value and alignment for students to understand how and what they are learning and its relevance to industry.
Yeah, I think, you know, you pick up on some really great things. It's both the alignment from a learning perspective and then alignment from an implementation and best practice perspective. So they can relate, you know, this is why I'm learning it, this is how you would do it, this is how you do it, this is why you would do it. And again, it relates itself back. So, you know, from implementation of all of this, what feedback have you had from students? Is it really about, you know, satisfaction levels, and how have students thought about the implementation of certification and alignment of certification?
Absolutely, Lee. So all the feedback from learners clearly shows how this approach has made them feel really supported in what they're doing and what they're learning. It's provided them with some career opportunities that they can actually understand. I think there's definitely a bridge and a gap that needs to be considered here when we consider job roles and also what the students are learning. And actually, it does help it much more easier for that transition. And in so many other ways, it also inspires them into new areas in the industry and new ways of thinking about their future career. And ultimately, I think we can all share that as a shared aim.
Excellent. So again, you know, great feedback from students, great implementation case to be there, Laura. You know, huge thank you for spending the time with us this morning and showing what you've done within your previous role. And we wish you all the best luck in Pearson College now, doing exactly the same around data audiences. So thank you. Our next speaker will be Mi Ting Tao, who will be talking about a case study of implementing Microsoft role-based certification. And again, I'd like to welcome to the actual call. So hello.
Hi Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Yeah.
So thank you for joining us from Singapore, because I know it's quite late there. So again, this is a worldwide audience. We have educators from all over. So would you like to give us a case study on how you've been implementing courses at Nanyang Polytechnic?
Sure. Thank you for this opportunity to share about this implementation and incorporation of this Microsoft certification into our diploma. So let me do some introduction to myself and to this diploma as well. The course manager of this diploma in Business Intelligence and Analytics, in short, we call it DBA. So in this particular course, we targeted to actually train and develop our graduates to have a strong foundation in IT, business intelligence analytics to provide the workforce and manpower to the diverse industries. So over the years, actually, this curriculum has evolved very much with the increase of this big data analytics and AI related modules. And in 2020, we actually revamped the entire structure to be competency based. And this competency based model is called professional competency model. It's an agile curriculum that can respond quickly to the industry and changes so that we can actually prepare our learners better. So if you look at the table below, this is the table which means that the competency units that students need to learn over the 3 years. So if you look at the right side of the table, it's actually the course competencies identified for our DBA graduates. So if you look at across the table, you have different columns, right? Those are actually different competency unit at the different competency level. So it actually forms a scaffolding path, learning path for each of the course competencies. So students without any IT or data analytics knowledge, they will actually continue to study until there's a skill mastery. So we actually comb through the industry contents and industry curriculum. And the good thing is that we actually found this Microsoft Learn curriculum on this data analyst, role-based data analyst. And we found that it's actually very aligned to one of the competency unit together with the project, the work integration unit. Yeah.
So in terms of that integration then, so you know, you built that scaffolding framework of how your courses map to the learning objectives. Again, you know, you've gone through the whole competency framework because you know you've seen the opportunity to align technical competencies with the outcomes. And then what you've done, you've integrated Microsoft Learn as primers and labs into the course with the certification and curriculum to provide that tangible course material. So if you could share some more details on that, it'd be great.
Yes, so for this, each of the competency unit is actually comprises of KSE, the knowledge, skills, and of course the attitude. So for knowledge part, we definitely would use like some of like the concepts that taught in this data analyst on the concepts on how to create a data visualization and how to prepare the data. And then the labs, of course, to build their skills onto this visual analytics, where they need to actually use different types of charts to visualize the different types of data. And the attitude is actually based on the how, like for example, when they do the assignment or when they do their assessments, how we can actually evaluate their attitude based on their how much effort they put into their assessments. Yeah.
Excellent. So in terms of the mode of delivery then, how are you actually teaching this course?
Yeah, so this course will be launched this particular competency unit will be launched in October 2021. I will be the one that teaching this three group of students. So this the duration of this competency unit will be 30 hours, and we are going to use the flipped classroom pedagogy, where the lecture, the concept will be covered through the asynchronous lecture, and then the labs provided by the Microsoft Learn will be used as for the hands-on learning activities. And if you look at our in-course assessments, we actually incorporate the DA100 analyzing data with Microsoft Power BI into one of our assessments. Yeah, and the other two will be designed by me on the practical test and practical assignment.
Excellent. So in terms of each student's going to get 3 hours of hands-on learning with the actual technology, and then you're going to give an activity-based scenario, which is going to be a one-hour scenario. So that 1,000-foot view of this is what we're going to implement, this is why we're going to implement it, and these are the fundamentals. This sounds a really great course. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the students think. So I know that you've been piloting the program today with educators, and what I really loved was how your educators are actually sharing badges from their certifications on LinkedIn. So tell us a bit more about that experience.
Yeah, I believe that this is actually the recognition of the skills gained by my colleagues and by the fellow educators. So I hope that in future, my students, when they actually pass the exam, they will be proud of themselves that they have achieved a certain level of the competencies in this particular area. Yeah.
Oh, excellent, Mao. So, you know, I think from my perspective, this has been a really interesting implementation of how you've implemented this course. We've got a question from the audience. So the question is, how does it work if students have done certifications already? Do they still get the same attainment? So, you know, because they've already passed that certification themselves, how would that impact them doing the course if the certification was already aligned?
So for the assessment, if I got the question correctly, it means that if, let's say, students pass the assessment or fail the assessment, well, how much impact will it impact to their competency unit? Am I right to say that?
Yeah. So I think the question is, if a student has already done the certification and they arrive for the course and they already have DA 100 passed, will they be given any credit, or will they just be, how will that work?
Okay, this model actually allows us with this flexibility. So if, let's say, students already have this DA 100, that means he or she will be exempted from this assessment, but he or she still need to actually fulfill the other two assessments. The other two is a practical assignment and practical test. So that will actually evaluate them on another aspect of their skills and knowledge. Yes.
Yeah. So it will then say, you know, have the students still got the competencies? Again, you know, the other options could be, you know, you give them a credit or you give them alternative academic assessments. So again, you know, I think you've answered that really well, and a great question from the audience. Thank you for that question. So Mao, I think, you know, huge thank you for us, and Nanyang Polytechnic seems to be doing amazing things with the course design and course curriculum. I'm going to ask Derek to come back and join us. So huge thank you. And we're going to then focus on the last module. So thank you.
Thank you.
So hi, Derek.
Hello again.
So we're now going to focus on our final modules in terms of the actual learning pathway. So again, we had those amazing case studies from Laura and Mao around how they've implemented curriculum in their courses. And again, within the actual module itself, we have additional case studies from Derek and the University of Lincoln. And our next module is Design a Program Launch Strategy. So this module is going to focus on ways to improve a degree program, the marketability, the attractiveness to the potential applications by actually having Microsoft certifications involved. So again, you can follow along with aka.ms/academic-program-cert-05. In the module, we'll have the following units. So we have an introduction, we'll explore the shared goals of the institution and Microsoft certification alignment. We'll describe the unique selling points of certification, understand the value of co-branding and marketing. We'll then do a knowledge check, and then we'll do a summary. Some of the really interesting things that we want to focus on around that co-branding marketing was something that Mao showed there in that session around the use of things like LinkedIn and badges, which are a very new service. But again, we're seeing that they've heavily liked by educators and by students. So Derek, let's start off by describing the unique selling point of certifications. What do you think are the key goals in aligning of those certifications from a marketing perspective?
So it's probably worthwhile jumping in and saying you have now arrived, you're an educator who's developed the program, it's went through the approval process, and you've been given the thumbs up. So you have this fantastic program. And now you have to start thinking about, well, how am I going to market it? How am I going to attract recruitment to it and student numbers and so forth? So if you look at computer science programs, I'll use the UK as an example, then they all look very similar. They've all got modules in, for example, or courses in programming, AI, machine learning, data, networking. So they all look very similar. So you have to start thinking about ways you can actually enhance your program, differentiate it from other programs, because there's dozens of other computing science programs that essentially offer the same type of courses that yours already does. And that's the role that certification can play. That's the added value that certification can bring to your programs. So if you offer certification as part of your program, you're already differentiating it from probably about 80% of the other computer science programs in the UK at least. And then you have to start thinking about, well, how can I sell that differentiation? How can I market that? And how can I raise awareness and broadcast that added value? And that's where this module comes in. It really starts to look at the relationships you can have with vendors such as Microsoft around being able to amplify that certification opportunity that you're offering students on your programs.
Excellent. So again, you know, let's look at some of the values of co-branding as a marketing tool. So, you know, co-branding is really key because it allows you to engage with new markets and new opportunities. Again, as Derek said, you know, you've gone through your certification program. You know who this course is aligned to, whether it's a new undergraduate course, a new master's course, a new CPD course. What are the key things from an education perspective, Derek, that you think you need to focus on in terms of showcasing that unique student opportunity of why they come to your institution rather than another institution?
Yeah, so I think Laura and Mel have already alluded to some of this previously with student experience stories, you know, like student case studies. And what we did at Lincoln was create some case study videos. We created some student experience stories, and these had elements of certification inside them. So students were talking about the benefits that certification could bring them as part of the programme, and also that it helps them with the type of career path that they want to choose. Because many, many students, especially first and second years, and even quite a significant number of final year students, still don't quite know which type of career path that they're going to pursue when they graduate. And certifications really help to give them that foundation in what they would like to pursue as a passion. And they can see the types of job roles that are achievable if they follow through on those certification pathways. So it's making sure, really, if you've got this program developed, on your program pages, your online pages, making sure that those student case studies are highly visible. You've got the video content, you've got links out to Microsoft, for example, on any other articles that's picked up. And the co-branding is not just about the digital assets, those badges, the Credly. It's about actually showcasing that relationship that you've got with Microsoft so that students can see that this institution has worked in partnership with Microsoft, they've developed this program, and they're offering certifications from this huge blue chip company. And that makes it really desirable for potential recruitments to enroll on that program.
Yeah, and again, it feeds back into the outcomes of the ACM reports around those learning objectives, knowledge areas, curriculum mapping, and outcomes for students in terms of, you know, NSAT, employability, an opportunity to actually go into a role which is associated to their degree pathway. So some of the key areas that we just saw in some of the case studies was this whole opportunity of social media channels and campaigns. And again, these are typically only really available once you've launched, and it's like showcasing the experiences and outcomes of both the educators and students who have undertaken those new curriculum learning pathways. So again, you know, from your experience, Derek, what are the key things that you've seen around how students and educators are utilising things like the Credly badges?
Yeah, so in Miao's example, it showed the educators broadcasting their achievements. And we don't quite have that at Lincoln yet, but I really want that. It's fantastic. But what we do have is the students who are broadcasting their achievements. So I really encourage students, first of all, to create a LinkedIn profile, because so many don't. And then we get them networking with companies, and then we get them to broadcast their achievements through passing that certification. So we walk them through the process of linking their Certiport accounts to the Credly account and then sharing those badges. And the big selling point of that is that those students get to broadcast those achievements to companies that they may actually end up working for. And I do have some anecdotal experiences of students actually securing interviews and so forth with businesses because they did share their certification exam achievements through those Credly badges on LinkedIn.
Excellent. So again, you know, the certifications are, you know, fundamental into the course curriculum. So one of the questions that we've had from the audience is how long does like the Azure Fundamental certification last? You know, if the student does it in year one, is it going to be lifelong throughout their degree course?
Well, the fundamental certifications don't expire. So that's really important and a great question. It's one of the first things that all students ask, do I have to take this exam again? And for the fundamentals, you don't. You don't have to take that exam again.
Another great question from the audience is that someone's looked at and seen that the MSc course for Lincoln has a number of certifications aligned. Is there an opportunity of doing that part-time if you already have the certifications?
Well, as we discussed this earlier, there was a similar question, wasn't there, with someone who already had those certifications? So there are alternatives there. So you could potentially be offered credit for the certifications that you've already taken, or we could be looking at an alternative academic assessment that covers those specific learning outcomes. So there are options, and that would be on a bespoke case-by-case basis where we would talk individually to those students to come up with a plan that works.
Excellent. So if you're interested, I would say reach out. So let's move on to the knowledge check. So this is our final knowledge check of today. So what we're going to be doing on this knowledge check is asking the following question. Student success stories are a great way to amplify and add value to program marketing messages. Which of the following can be used to share and validate student certification success effectively? Is it A, Facebook stories? Is it B, print prospectus and articles? Is it C, blog posts? Or is it D, the Credly digital badges? So Derek, which one do you think might be the wrong answers?
So I think the key thing from this question here are that the words validate and effectively. So when you're thinking about, for example, creating a Facebook story, you've probably got limited reach there. You've passed your certification and you're on Facebook and you've made a post, I passed this certification. So there's probably not a lot of reach there beyond your immediate friends group. And then we're looking at the same thing for a print prospectus. So each institution or school has normally got these really glossy, thick booklets or magazines that showcase all the different programs, but those are only printed once a year. And it may be the case that the certification has changed slightly or the badge has changed. So it's not the best approach. It's hugely asynchronous and it could have out of date information. And then we have blog posts. Again, these are similar to Facebook. They're going to have limited reach potentially, and they're just not going to reach the type of network that you actually want to reach in terms of a professional network. And then finally, we have the Credly digital badges. So these are the most effective way to validate and network with the appropriate people that you actually want to reach. So if you pass AZ900, you can then post the validation link onto LinkedIn, and that effectively validates the certification through the authentication URL, and you're also reaching those professional networks that you want to see that you've passed those exams, and potentially network with businesses that you could end up working with in the future.
Yep, so the correct answer is D, Credly badges, and it's great to see that the audience has been listening to us throughout this session. Again, you know, what the key thing there is around the validation piece is that that is validated to the individual. So it will prove that that individual has that certification. So let's quickly do a summary of some of the key things that hopefully you've got from the session today. And if you're more interested, you'll go along and do the Microsoft Learn module and hopefully implement certification into your degrees. So hopefully you've understood the benefits of implementing certification in degree programs. You should have gained the skills to choose the right level of certifications that's most suitable for your courses or program needs. You should be able to identify academic and industrial requirements for implementing certifications. You should have awareness of the processes involved in creating new programs and proposal documents. You should be able to deliver suitable learning outcomes for your course program. And you should have the skills to map certification outcomes to academic learning outcomes. And then hopefully you'll be able to implement, launch a new course program with full certifications. So we hope that you've really enjoyed today. If you've got any questions, it's now time for you to answer or for you to ask us some questions so we can answer those questions. But we have a great set of learning resources available. So we have the Microsoft Learn Educator Ambassador Program. So if you're interested in becoming a Microsoft Learn Educator Ambassador, please go to aka.ms/MSLE. We have the Microsoft Learn Student Ambassador Program aimed at students. So again, it's just aka.ms/student ambassadors. We have Microsoft Azure for Student, which gives all students over the age of 18 access to Azure services. And we have the Microsoft Learn LTI application, which allows you to blend Microsoft Learn content into your learning management system, and that's an open source project that Microsoft could operate. Again, we have a survey for this event. The survey ID is 14410, And the URL is aka.ms/reactor/survey. So let's go over to some questions and see what questions we have, Derek. So we have a question that student success stories are a great way to amplify and add progress. Oh, sorry, that's a poll. So do we have any other questions from the audience? I think, you know, we've had a great session today, Derek. Again, there's lots of resources that are made available for online viewing. Do you have any parting statements for the audience over best practice?
Yeah, really, it's all about if you are already offering certifications for your students, then you really should be thinking about it. More and more institutions are taking this up. The MSLE, or the Microsoft Learn Educators community, is growing every year. There's dozens of UK universities that are now undertaking and offering certifications for the students. So if you aren't already doing it, then I recommend you take a look at these links that Lee's just posted up and think about joining that programme. It's a great community to be part of.
And I'll just like to say a huge thank you to all our speakers, to Derek, Laura and Mao. You know, huge thank you for you spending the time with us. And we wish you every success in implementing your new curricula. So thank you.
Thank you.